You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Winning a battle is not the same thing as winning a war. Taking the city is not the same thing as capturing the hearts and minds of Ukrainians. What they've demonstrated with extraordinary courage is that they will not be subjugated to Vladimir Putin's will to be under Russia's thumb. So whether that takes another week, another month, another year to play out, it will. And I know how this is going to end. But the question is, can we end it sooner rather than later with less suffering?
With less suffering, those are the words of Secretary of State Antony Blinken, talking about how the Ukrainians continue to fight back. And the latest from Ukraine is Russia has deployed, according to U.S. intel, nearly 100% of its pre-stage forces into Ukraine. All those troops that they'd gathered north of Ukraine and Belarus, and I assume also those troops that they're bringing in from the south via the Black Sea or direct from Crimea, they're all deployed, nearly 100%. And they're still not winning. The Ukrainians are fighting back tooth and nail. That editorial you heard just before we began absolutely represents their situation in comparison to us in our country when we began our country. We would be offering you live streaming today at Larry Connors USA YouTube. But wait a minute. I need your help here. Big Brother YouTube sent me a message complaining about something I said or a guest said on a live stream program last week. I'm really still not sure which program, exactly what was said. I'm going to give you more details in the next hour. We are videotaping, we're taping, I should say, the YouTube presentation, and maybe we'll be able to post it so you can watch it later, but we cannot live stream today because YouTube said, shut it off. And, of course, I said a response, and the response back is silence. Listen, this is an exactly a perfect example, and I'm just one of many. I mean, if they could censor Trump, they could censor anybody. That's what they're doing, and they don't really have to explain. But we are going to spend a lot of time over the next 2 hours about what's happening with Ukraine and what we are or are not doing, what we should be doing, and what we just apparently won't do because Biden will not back down and admit he was wrong. And while he does that, when we are still importing oil, we are still importing oil from Ukraine, and I will remind you, in every barrel of oil, I said from Ukraine, from Russia, in every barrel we import, it is tainted with Ukrainian blood. Just keep that in mind. We're going to be joined by Thomas Spohr, heritage expert on weapons of mass destruction. In 1991, Ukraine became independent. When the USSR split, it had 1,800 strategic, 4,000 tactical nuclear weapons on Ukrainian territory. What happened to them? And what do you know about suitcase nukes? Also, Colonel Jack Jackson, U.S. Marine Corps retired, sometimes host of this program, has extensive hours in various fighter jets. If Poland does give MiG-29s to Ukraine, can they be effective against the MiG-29s? If the MiG-29s, can they be effective against the Russian jets? Then also something that happened over the weekend They got a lot of traction in a hurry. Senator Lindsey Graham calling on Russians, you need to assassinate Putin. Well, the White House is suddenly all so high and mighty condemning that statement. What do you think? What do you think about him making the statement? And what do you think about, could that lead to regime change? I got an email on it. I'll be answering that for you. We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. We are not live streaming. YouTube says no, but we're looking for other ways. I'm on Rumble, but we don't have that up as live stream yet. But you're listening, and I encourage you to get others to do so. Lock and load, ready on the right. If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone, and Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issue solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You ain't nothing but a hound.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Joining me now from Moldova, the latest stop on his European trip, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Secretary Blinken, thanks for joining us. So you say Russian strikes are hitting schools, hitting hospitals, targeting drinking water, targeting electricity grids. I understand that the U.S. doesn't want to hurt European economies. The U.S. doesn't want to risk direct military confrontation. But it seems clear that the sanctions that have been implemented so far have not immediately stopped Putin's advance, that the line that's being drawn right now is not likely going to be enough to stop him.
Let's stop it right there. Let's stop it. That is CNN's Jake Tapper with Secretary of State Blinken over the weekend, yesterday. And he pointed out something that's obvious, obvious. These sanctions are not doing the job because they're half-hearted still. We are still not footing a full court press on. And why? It makes no sense as to why we are not doing so. Listen, shortly after the invasion began, the White House acknowledged, oh, we knew the sanctions weren't really going to keep anything from happening. We knew they weren't going to deter him. Well, then why the hell were you doing all the talking? Just to hear yourselves talk or to make it look like you're accomplishing something? Do you want to tell the Ukrainians who are under fire, live fire on a constant basis, nighttime now, 9:15 in Ukraine, you want to tell them that, hey, we'll find another sanction that will stop that bullet from hitting your child, another sanction that will keep that missile from hitting a nursing home or a school or near a train station? This administration is not just inadequate, not just incompetent, but absolutely stupid. stupid. And even Jake Tapper of CNN, the group which always, with the rest of the state-controlled media, comes to help out and help spin the story just right, had this question for Blinken.
What do you say to the innocent Ukrainian civilians who are saying, why has the West not directly intervened to save them from the slaughter?
Well, first, Jake, I'm here in Europe working with NATO allies, European Union partners, and others, working on, among other things, increasing even more the extraordinary pressure that's already been exerted on Russia with unprecedented actions and sanctions that are having a crippling effect on the Russian economy, as well as additional steps that we can take to help our friends in Ukraine, including getting them even more assistance on top of the historic aid we've gotten them to date, and that has been effective.
Well, apparently it hasn't, has it? The Russians are still trying to move in, and as I said earlier, 100%, almost 100% of the troops they had mustered and gathered north of Ukraine and Belarus and elsewhere are now moved in. And they've called for reinforcements. We were told the other day, reinforcements from eastern Russia. I don't see them slowing down at all, do you? And here we sit in our God-blessed homes, full of food and water and shelter. Some are more than others. Some have less than others. But you don't have someone trying to bomb your house on a consistent basis, as they're having right now in various cities and areas around and inside Ukraine. I should say inside Ukraine. And here's the other issue. One of the big issues that I have to say, again, there is no common sense. One of the first things Biden did when he took office was to shut down the Keystone Pipeline and then began to wipe out oil and gas leases on federal lands. He knew what he was doing. He was doing the bidding of the Green Pie in the Sky group. We want to get rid of all the fossil fuels. We want to be done with all of it. And in the midst of all of this, they still have that attitude. So what is going on right now? And, of course, he also approved the Nord Stream 2 pipeline running from northwestern Russia under the Baltic Sea, 750 miles to an East German port. The Germans have not activated that line at this point, but they are going to need fuel at some point. That the question will be, well, where are we going to go? This nation under Trump was energy independent. We didn't have to worry if any oil came to us from Russia. And in fact, we could export oil to European countries and help them so they would not have to be dependent upon Russia. But again, that was under Trump. Biden wants to continue to hold the line and sell out to the green mob. Of course, gas prices are going up. They hit $5 a gallon in California for regular, maybe $6 now, the last I checked. And heating oil prices, we're coming out of the winter. That will help a little bit, but still not going to stop a lot of things, especially if you try to travel over the summer with your kids or your job requires you to drive a lot. Those Uber drivers are going to have to start charging you more. Taxi cab drivers will put in place a surcharge as they had in the past. Airline flight prices will be going up. And, of course, that means every good delivered to any store, whatever you want, anything from soap to cereal, will be higher in price because just getting it to the store if they can, is going to cost more and more money. And we are still allowing, our government still allowing oil to come from Soviet Union to the U.S. Now, here's the irony in this. We are told that the oil that's coming in is mainly meant, is being purchased by private businesses. You know, it really doesn't make a damn as if it's bought by private business or the federal government. We still could stop it from coming in. And why are they having to buy it? Well, because they can't get it anywhere else. And the irony of all ironies is that most of that is going into California, which has filled with green liberals who don't want any more fossil fuels. They don't want anything like that whatsoever. And in fact, just this weekend on MSNBC, Congressional Progressive Caucus Chair Yahya Pal argued, we have to move off fossil fuels so we, quote, are free of the ability of dictators to blackmail us over oil and gas. And then she said, but increasing domestic oil production would not keep gas prices from increasing because, quote, no matter what we do, prices of gas are going to go up. If she tries to fill her gas tank, if she actually does it and watches it fill up and at the price now and just tries, if she can think that far back, a year and a half ago, when Trump was still in office and we were moving forward and we were energy independent, we were not being blackmailed by anybody because we had our own oil. Now, that's a question, again, that Jake Tapper brought up in his interview with Antony Blinken.
The U.S. has not banned imports of Russian oil. The U.S. has not rolled out trade sanctions. We're still working with the Russians on the Iran deal. Why not do everything we can now? Well, Speaker Pelosi said she's willing to cut off all imports of Russian oil.
We're adding to the sanctions virtually every day. We're doing it in coordination with Europeans. When there's a difference between us, if there's a loophole on one side or the other, we're closing it.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You're just blah, blah, blah again. If there's a loophole, you damn well shut it down. There would be no loophole if you say no oil comes to our shores, period. That's not a loophole. That's a directive, and it will be followed. No oil comes to this country from Russia. Where's the loophole? It's as clear and as simple as that. But the issue again here is it's still an issue of, as you know, as it has been with COVID, control, politics. So let's pick up Tapper again as he's trying to get some kind of solid answer on a Blinken.
When it comes to oil, Russian oil, I was on the phone yesterday with the president and other members of the cabinet on exactly this subject. And we are now talking to our European partners and allies to look in a coordinated way at the prospect of banning the import of Russian oil while making sure that there is still an appropriate supply of oil on world markets. That's a very active discussion as we speak.
In other words, more blah, 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 blah. And let me add this. There's a new report, according to Axios. Biden might be exploring additional options for oil. You green pie in the sky people, listen up. He's thinking of getting oil from Saudi Arabia. They're planning a meeting between the Islamic Nation and trying to get them to produce more oil to offset the loss that could come if we ban the purchase of oil from Russia. Why don't we open up our oil and gas leases? Oh, that would be too simple and smart. But the meaning will be coming at a time when Americans are beginning to hurt due to inflation. And so they're trying to find a way to do something. So they're also trying to make it look like they are doing something when, in fact, they are not. Last year, Biden released an unclassified report concluding that the Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Salman had approved the killing of Washington Post writer. Remember that? And yet now we're wanting to talk to Saudi Arabia about, can you help us with our oil deal and at the same time help us get a nuclear deal with Iran? Are you out of your... Yeah, yes, never mind. He is out of his mind. And yet the battle continues in Ukraine. And the question has been raised about war crimes, in particular regarding one explosive device being used by the Russians. We'll get into that part of that story. And also the nukes, which used to be in Ukraine, when we continue.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We've seen very credible reports of deliberate attacks on civilians, which would constitute a war crime. We've seen very credible reports about the use of certain weapons. And what we're doing right now is documenting all of this, putting it all together, looking at it, and making sure that as people and the appropriate organizations and institutions investigate whether war crimes have been or are being committed, we can support whatever they're doing. So right now, we're looking at these reports. They're very credible, and we're documenting everything.
So says Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, talking about war crimes, and it's not just the U.S., but the United Nations Office on Genocide Prevention apparently is involved. And then the question, of course, is, so what? So if you find Russia is directly involved in war crimes, and there's a specific and yet also very loose description of them, what are they going to do to Putin? Now or later? The International Criminal Court has specific definitions for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the crime of aggression. The biggest issue that's come up lately was the vacuum bombs. Vacuum bombs are thermobaric weapons, suck in the oxygen from the surrounding air. They generate a powerful explosion, a massive pressure wave. They can have enormous destructive effects, and especially on people. Russia has previously used them in Chechnya. A Russian thermobaric multiple rockets launcher was found near the border with Ukraine late last month. And then there are also cluster bombs. A missile was fired and explodes thousands of feet in the air, releasing smaller bombs that can each detonate when they fall to the ground. Amnesty International claims that a Russian cluster bomb fell on a Ukrainian preschool. I need to make sure you're aware that it appears that when trying to find Al-Qaeda and chase them out of the caves They were hiding in Afghanistan and wherever at the time. The U.S. was also using thermobaric weapons placed into the cave to suck all the air out of the cave and kill those inside. And the way they die is horrific. All of the air in your lung is sucked out and then filled with poisonous gas, which ignites, burns you from inside out in a most painful death. So if they find Putin guilty of this, what are we going to do? What is the national court going to do? Here's something else to consider. When Ukraine split from the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union fell apart in 91, Ukraine was considered the third largest country with nuclear weapons. What happened to them? That story coming up. Many car dealers are quick to sell you a car, but Ackerman Toyota knows that's just the beginning of your relationship. When it comes time for routine or special service work, others might be too busy. Not Ackerman Toyota. Hours and days to fit your schedule. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
My next guest, we've had on numerous times before, always glad to have you back. He is Heritage Center for National Defense. He certainly knows about nuclear weapons, 35-plus years in the U.S. Army, retiring as Lieutenant General Thomas Spohr. Glad to have you back on board, sir.
Hey, Larry, it's good to be here. Thank you.
There are several issues I want to run through with you. First of all, your assessment as to how the war is going inside Ukraine right now between Ukraine and the Russian troops.
I think everybody's surprised, Larry, about how well the Ukrainians have been able to counter the Russians. I think the Russians are making decent progress in the south. They've been kind of rolling up the port towns along the Black Sea, and so it wouldn't surprise me if they're not able to kind of secure almost the coast of Ukraine. In the north, it's a different story. They have not been able, as everybody's been talking about, been able to achieve their objectives to either cause Kyiv to capitulate or any of the other northern major cities. And so it's a mixed bag. You got to hint to the Ukrainians for what you're seeing, that they're out there. People that, you know, didn't sign up are not soldiers, and they're out there fighting for their country.
And many of the soldiers of the Russian army did not sign up either. They were conscripted, and they thought they were going to a war game, not an actual war.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, the Russians conduct two conscription periods every year, and they conscript about 200,000 of their citizens, people that really, if they had their first choice, would not serve in the military, but that they give them 3 or 4 months of training, and then they put them out there. And I suspect, you know, compared to a U.S. service member, they're much less well-trained than a U.S. service member.
Which also brings to the position morale, and I want to get to that moment, but before I move off that particular subject, there have been at least 8,000 to 12,000 Russians arrested at various demonstrations throughout Russia that are upset that Putin is sending sons off to a war that they had no business doing.
Yeah, exactly right. So the Russian citizens are doing probably the best they can, you know. But like you say, they're being arrested by Putin's thugs and put in prison. And so unless we get to the point where there's a million or hundreds of thousands of Russians in the street demanding a change, these 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 Russians that have been arrested for protesting, it's probably not going to have a decisive impact on Vladimir Putin's state of mind.
One of my listeners, and by the way, those of you who are trying to find us on Larry Connors USA, YouTube live channel. YouTube shut us off. They didn't like something we said the other day. And because big tech has such authority, they have shut down our live stream of YouTube for Larry Connors USA. We are recording this program. Of course, you're hearing it live, and we're recording it audio. We're also recording video, which we'll try to put up later, if they allow us to do so. I have one listener from Chicago that sent me something that written in a column called Under Chicago Boys. And, Tom, this is a – he's talking about this column of these Russian army's vehicles stuck for 8 days now in one area, and he said they can't go off-road because of mud and tire problems, and the Ukrainians opened floodgates of reservoirs, flooding them and the surrounding areas and turning them into quagmires for months. And I've seen the pictures. It looks like that would be an accurate description.
Yeah, you know, the Ukrainian mud is famous. It was famous in World War II for being 2 feet deep and sticky like glue. And so for whatever reason, they had an early thaw in the Ukraine this year. The temperature's about 40 degrees there today. And so what was frozen has turned into muck. And so I think that's probably right, that they got to stay on roads. Now, there's not just one road. They could get on multiple roads. But for whatever reason, they have been on this road, I think waiting for the way ahead of them to get clear, or maybe waiting for fuel supplies to catch up to them. But it's really striking to anybody that has military experience about this column on this road, because the United States military, the first thing you do is get off a road and get dispersed and stuff like that, and they have thus far not done that.
Well, one final question on that, and that has to do with morale, is that there have been reports that some Russian soldiers have actually punctured their fuel tanks, so the fuel's leaking out, so they're not going to be able to move even when the fuel truck gets there.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I came in the military in a time where we had people that had entered it who had been drafted, and, you know, they're to tell the difference between those people that were in the military because they wanted to be and those people that were there because they were told by their government they had to be in there. And so, I had under my control at the start in the 80s people that had been drafted, and these people just, you know, were constant discipline problems versus the force the military has now. They're all there because they want to be. They signed up for this. They volunteered for it. They knew things were going to be hard, and they accepted that. And so it's complete difference in a conscripted force versus a professional force like the U.S. military has.
You're listening to Thomas Spohr of the Heritage Foundation, expert on nuclear weapons as well. In 91, when Ukraine declared independence of the Soviet Union during that collapse, it suddenly became the third largest nuclear power, missile power control in the world at that time, and something like 1,500 strategic warheads and additional warheads. What has happened to all those nuclear weapons?
No, they were all destroyed. So we had various SALT II discussions, and both the United States and now Russia, you know, before we had the Cold War ended, we each had maybe like 15,000 strategic nuclear weapons all over, silos, wherever. Now each of us are down to about 1,500. And so the ones that were in the Ukraine went back to Russia, were destroyed. Similarly, the United States destroyed a bunch of nuclear weapons as well. So now both sides, Russia, the United States, maintain about 1,500 nuclear weapons. And I should mention that China has embarked on a nuclear weapon building program. And so where we used to dismiss them as a non-threat and nuclear,
No surprise there, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right.
Now, along that point, my understanding is Ukraine, even though being an independent country at that point, decided we will agree to release them, start sending them back to Russia, and then they can destroy it because Russia promises it will protect us. Am I wrong in that assessment?
No, everybody signed a memorandum back in 1994, and then the United States was there, China was there, all kinds of different countries there, and they all kind of said, in principle, that they agree to protect the sovereignty of the Ukraine and stuff like that. And 1994 was a different time. You know, I don't know if you can remember, but I mean, we all were celebrating the end of war, and it looked like there was going to be just endless peace. And so for the Ukraine to keep, you know, all these strategic ICBMs and strategic nuclear weapons really didn't seem like something they needed, you know, because peace was breaking out everywhere. People were putting daffodils in the end of rifles, and And it was a different time than it is now.
Well, also, there are still, as of 2021, reports that Russia was acknowledging that something like a 100 missing so-called suitcase nuclear bombs. What exactly is that, and how dangerous are they?
Yeah, both the United States and Soviet Union at the time had nuclear weapons that were so small you could fit them in a backpack. Now, it was a heavy backpack. It was about a 100-pound backpack. And special forces mostly were envisioned to use these nuclear weapons, parachute in behind enemy lines, blow up key terrain, bridges, if you will, key infrastructure, dams, things like that, and cause havoc in areas controlled by the enemy. United States.
The question remains, where are the missing nuclear suitcases?
Yeah, so Russia will say they were destroyed, they've all been accounted for, not to worry. Now, the dilemma is Russia said the same thing about their chemical weapons program, and then we have people getting poisoned by nerve gas in public squares in England and people being poisoned on planes with nerve gas. So the question becomes, how much can we trust of the Russians when they say they have destroyed all their suitcase nuclear bombs?
Now, we're dealing with Russia and Ukraine now, but even Biden said that just last month, Putin has a much larger ambition than Ukraine, wants to reestablish the Soviet Union. What would be his next target if he doesn't decide, okay, this is enough, we will cease and desist?
The most easiest and closest targets to him are what we call the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, right up there, tucked right against Russia.
The Baltic states.
Yeah, the Baltic states, three of them. Each one of them probably doesn't have a military that's any bigger than, say, 5 or 10,000. You know, they're tough little guys. They promised to fight, but they couldn't hold out.
One final question there. All three of those are NATO members. Where would that put the U.S.?
Yeah, so you are correct. If Putin attacks one of those guys, that brings in all of NATO. The dilemma is, by the time NATO gets there and gets its act together, these are small states, no more than 100 miles across. Chances are Russia could be fairly well established before NATO even gets there.
Well, your signals begin to go out on us, but I do thank you very much for your time, as always, sir. We'll do it again.
Thank you. All right, Larry, thank you.
You bet. Tom Spohr, retired Army Lieutenant General, now with the Heritage Foundation. The other day, Senator Lindsey Graham said, I encourage those in Russia who are upset with what Putin's doing to assassinate him. And suddenly the left got so concerned about such language. Stand by. Hey, let's do lunch at Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles. That's right, Cafe Napoli 3, now open for lunch and Sunday brunch. So let's plan lunch or Sunday brunch at Cafe Napoli in St. Charles. Of course, you always get great food and service at each Napoli location. Clayton, Town and Country, St. Charles. But let me remind you again, for lunch or Sunday brunch, Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham the other day made a remark, and I'll tell you, we're going to have some disagreements here, I think, even among conservatives, and some of you might disagree with me by the time I finish, or maybe again you'll applaud. Let me flat out ask you, what do you think about assassinating Putin? Let's just pose it in that question first. Here's what Lindsey Graham said. He put out a tweet. The only people who can fix this are Russians. The only way this ends is for somebody in Russia to take this guy out. You would be doing your country and the world a great service. Whoa, boy, did that set off a storm. and not just from the left. I'll break it down for you in a moment, but it also got me an email I want to share with you. Let's begin there. One of my listeners, Bob, longtime listener, said, why would Lindsey Graham dangerously, irresponsibly call for assassinating Putin? What are your thoughts? So here's what I wrote Bob back in full. Bob, sorry to be late responding. From time to time, Senator Graham, as Trump did and does, says things which were best left unsaid. Still, when Putin invaded Ukraine on a false pretense and sent assassination squads to kill Zelensky, I'm not that bothered by Graham's remarks. Numerous Democrats have openly advocated the assassination of Trump. And, of course, very little was said about those remarks. If pressed, they say, oh, it's just talk. So in Graham's case, it's just talk. He's not in a position to execute Putin. And I really doubt Graham's remarks will bother Putin, who has ordered assassinations of several fellow Russians. That's my response. Senator Ted Cruz apparently would have a disagreement on me based on what I just told you and what I read. A quote from Senator Ted Cruz said, Senator Graham's remarks was, quote, an exceptionally bad idea. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican, said Graham's tweet was, quote, irresponsible, dangerous, unhinged. Saski at the White House dismissed Graham's idea out of hand and said that's not the position of our government, certainly not a statement you'll hear come from the mouth of anybody working in this administration. And Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Democrat, facing criticism about comments about Israel, tweeting, seriously? WTF. This is the same congresswoman who has basically honored the PLO and those who want to wipe out Israel. But I find it pretty amazing, all of these folks, and I'm including Senator Ted Cruz in it, are so pushed to the edge over it. Do we need to go through history again? You do know that Osama bin Laden ordered and carried out the execution, not he, but sent teams in to kill, Obama sent in to kill Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda. And, of course, we had Trump assassinate Soleimani, both of them killed on foreign lands, bin Laden in Pakistan, Soleimani in Iraq. Now, those are the presidents carrying out such an assassination, not encouraging other people to do it. And Barack Obama, according to Al Jazeera, the voice for Muslims in the U.S., says Obama opposes the death penalty, but issued kill orders for Muslims overseas without any trial. Look, when you're dealing with an enemy, the same thing happened in World War II with Hitler. We were hoping somebody inside his circle would get close enough to kill him. Be honest about it. Be honest about it. So maybe you don't want it said, but you really want it to happen? Is that what you're going to try to tell me? I personally would have no loss of sleep if somebody inside the Kremlin assassinates Putin. Put me down as with Graham on that. And I will bet you if you really press Senator Cruz and other Republicans and even Democrats, they'd say, yeah, we need to put an end to him. And if that's one quick way to do it, a regime change, which is a fear Putin has right now, we will explain coming up. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.